Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, and welcome back, Kristen Polacy.
Thanks for having me.
Our co-host today. We're going to have a discussion about black and white birth in America. Are there disparities between outcomes for white mothers and babies and black mothers and babies? And if so, why are there disparities and what can we do to improve the situation? My guest today had her first baby in a hospital setting that felt overly interventive and lacking in warmth and intimacy. She had her next two babies at home, surrounded by family, friends, and supported by midwives. She became an educator and doula for many years before becoming a midwife herself several years back, and now supports growing families in the greater Los Angeles area. Debbie Allen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. So I love every time I'm around you, I learn something new. And I'm always inspired by you. I think you're awesome.
Oh, thank you.
I'm glad you're here today. So I was really surprised to find out that there's a giant disparity in outcomes for black women versus white women and black babies versus white babies born in America. Huge. For women, they are 3 to 4 times more likely to die within a year of having the baby. And that's a 234-ish% increase, which seems alarming and huge. But it's verified. And, you know, there's a lot of data on it. I would like to say also that our outcomes in America for mothers and babies in general is not that wonderful compared to other countries. And that also compared to other countries, we're actually slipping down compared to other developed countries. We're having worse outcomes than we had, let's say, 10 or 15 years ago, whereas other countries are improving. And that's with pouring a lot of money into and technology into childbirth. What's going on?
Well, I mean, I guess the issues with birth in general is that, in my opinion, it's too micromanaged. It's too medicalized. So women don't have the opportunity to trust their body. Women are induced more often. Yeah, it's just very medically managed, and whether you have a high-risk pregnancy or a low-risk pregnancy. Sometimes that's appropriate, but most times it's not necessary. For black women and babies, it's systematic racism and biases in healthcare and how we're treated in the healthcare system that makes a difference.
You had your first baby in a hospital.
I did.
You didn't love the experience.
I didn't. You know, I had all the interventions. I had an episiotomy, an epidural, all the things that I didn't want. And I just felt like I wasn't heard. I felt like when I asked a question, it was, they treated me like I was imposing on them, even though I'm asking a question about my own health care and the care of my son. So for me, those things were really, you know, my doctor had a really great bedside manner, and I thought she was great. And when my son was born, I realized that her view of birth and what I viewed of birth were completely different. Mm-hmm. But really, the determining factor why when I left the hospital, I looked at their dad and said, "I'll never have a baby in the hospital again," was I had to be sutured, and two doctors that I had never seen come in while she's doing that, and they just start chatting about the weekend. And for me, it was really. It was like the fact that they didn't realize that was completely inappropriate really bothered me. So that was the determining factor. That was like the thing that pushed me over the edge. And I said, this is not the way for me.
That's interesting. We did a documentary on breech babies called Heads Up. And one of the moms who had a cesarean just because she was breech, so it was a sort of like a quote-unquote routine or scheduled cesarean, she was in there and she said one of the things that really struck her was that the people in the room were talking about the basketball scores while they're getting her baby out.
Yeah.
As if nothing's going on, nothing sacred is going on, nothing's important in the room. Like she's almost not even there.
Yeah.
She's just like they're plumbers working on plumbing.
Exactly.
And she was just there really, really bothered her. And I can understand that.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it just takes away the intimacy of what birth should be and just respect for a woman's body and what's happening during that process. So, and even the next day when I asked questions about my son and I, you know, wanted to make sure that he was with me, when the shift change happened, the nurse said, "Oh, I heard all about you." And I wasn't really being difficult. I just had questions like, you know, is it a problem for me to ask a question? And time and time again, I think for black women in general, but black women even more, we're not heard. Even though we're asking questions, we're trying to have a conversation, they're not hearing what we're saying.
Right. So I what's even more alarming, because you would initially wonder if the disparity is that there are more advantaged white women and disadvantaged black women. And so perhaps as a pool in the United States, white women have better access to healthcare doctors and hospitals that black women don't have access to, different sets of healthcare for different people. But when you look deeper, you find out that the disparity transcends socioeconomic class.
Absolutely.
So a wealthy black woman with exact same access to the healthcare that a wealthy white woman has, or not just even for labor and delivery, but even in terms of general nutrition and ability to work out with a trainer and things like that and be healthy before, during, and after the birth, still has that 3 to 4 times more likely to die than the white woman. So it can't just be advantage versus disadvantage, wealth versus lack of wealth. So racism really becomes the spotlight.
Yeah, I think black people specifically and people of color in general have been saying time and time again that continuously when we move through the world, we're not getting treated the same. And, you know, you hear comments like, well, even when you see, in general, everything, we've been saying that for a very long time. And I think now with videos that, you know, people are recording things on their phone, you get to see a peek mm-hmm. into what we've been saying that has been dismissed for forever since the beginning. So in healthcare, it just, that systematic racism transcends everything. It permeates through every piece of life that we experience. So, yeah.
Do you feel that way in general?
Oh, absolutely. Even when I was a doula, when I'd go in with white clients, even as a midwife, when I go in with white clients, like if there's a transport where they need to be at the hospital as opposed to having their baby at home, the care is very different. The language is very different. The when you go in with people of color, they assume that the mom is a single mom and that they refer to the baby as the father of the child as the baby's daddy, as opposed to the, you know, is this your spouse? Those are different. It's just different kind of language you hear when you're with people of color and white women. Very, very different.
So I know, for example, there's this mechanic that we used to take our car to. And there's no question that when my wife would take the car in, she would get treated very differently than I would take the car in. The conversation that they had with her was very different than the conversation that they would have with me, even for the same thing. So she would take the car in and then not like the conversation that she had and just leave. And then I would go back and have a conversation about the same thing, and it would be a completely different conversation. So, you know, there's sexism built into that.
Yeah, but most of the time, definitely, for sure. But typically I'm dealing with couples.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm just saying there, it's just the same place of business will treat two different people differently in that case, just based on gender.
Right.
So it does make sense to me. I mean, look, I read somewhere that you sort of size up somebody and make your opinion about them in the first 10 seconds of knowing them. What are you basing that on?
Right. And if the only opinion you have of African people of African descent in this country is what you've seen in the movies and what you've seen on the news and what you've seen, the narrative that is constructed about us that is not true, then that's what you're basing it on. So when you come in, you assume that you're a single mom, you assume that you have used drugs, you assume that you're on Medi-Cal or welfare, you assume all those things about people of color and African-American women in general that you don't assume with other people. So those microaggressions, I mean, imagine if you just go through life with constant microaggressions, but imagine if you go through your healthcare where you're already disadvantaged because you're preoccupied with the reason that you're there, and you have microaggressions. Like that, you shouldn't have to fight like that. You shouldn't have to, you should be able to just go in and get care based on who you are without all these preconceptions of who you are based on biases.
I mean, two people, regardless of, I would say, gender or race, should be able to go and get the same exact assessment and treatment. But it doesn't work that way.
Ever. I won't say ever, but most times
it doesn't typically work that way.
No,
here's a question. Do you Wait, first of all, what do you mean by microaggressions?
I mean, microaggressions are just like that, assuming that this woman is not married to her partner when maybe she is. Why would you make that assumption when I can go in with a white client that doesn't, that those assumptions aren't made? Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a, I had a client that, who just had another baby 8 days ago, that there was a demise. Her baby passed away in utero when we got to the home. She pushed out her baby 8 minutes after we got there. Baby had died in utero probably a couple of days before that. It was very obvious that that happened. We transported to the hospital. She also had a retain. And we go in. Not only did they take her husband, so you have a couple who has lost their child, who's transported to the hospital, home birth. The death of the baby didn't have anything to do with the home birth. It just happened. Right. She goes into the hospital. She gets the care that she needs. This goes on for maybe 45 minutes. An hour after we had been there, they call the sheriff's department on us. The sheriff's department takes the father of this child, her husband, to their house, has him stand outside for 3 hours while they search their house from top to bottom. They drug test the mother. They, I almost got arrested. I mean, that kind of really aggressive, over-the-top scenarios that happen to us. I mean, I've transported with many, I've worked with many midwives of all colors, and that I've never seen anything like that happen to them.
That's really incredible.
So it's just that you assume that they did something wrong. You assume that there was, you know, why would you search, why would you take a father from his spouse, this couple that has just lost their child, to his home to search it for 3 hours. I mean, things like that. That's an extreme story, and most stories aren't that extreme. But when we say that the treatment that Black women are getting in the hospital is not the same, it just isn't.
Right, but I think now that I understand what you're saying, the microaggressions are almost a bigger problem because they're so common.
And those microaggressions, you know, they play on your pregnancy. They play into how you grow your baby. You know, they play into high blood pressure. They play into stressors. You don't feel comfortable talking to a provider who already has a bias, an obvious bias against you. And you know, you don't want to. Sometimes you get tired of fighting for all the little things. Like the bigger picture is you need care. So instead of addressing every little comment and even when you're in a medical situation and the doctor starts to talk like they assume Black people talk, like stuff like that. It's so obvious to us, and I think less obvious to other people because they're not experiencing it.
But also those micro, like when you come and tell a story like that, my heart fell into my stomach because I work with laboring clients in right. general and I've seen similar situations unfold completely differently. But when you just say, well, I don't feel like I'm hurt as well, that's not going to really move anybody. But that's happening all the time.
Yeah.
And those not being heard, not being listened to, not being respected, not being taken, you know, we know things as patients that nobody can tell from doing diagnostic tests and medical tests. But if we're not being heard, you're missing a very big piece of the clinical picture.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the New York Times, I'm sure you saw, had an article about a woman who was preeclamptic, and she kept saying,
absolutely,
I don't feel good, and she wasn't heard. And, of course, Serena Williams,
yeah.
after she had her baby, she knew she was having an embolism, and she wasn't heard.
I know. And you know, Serena Williams is a woman who has money. She's educated. Like she's well known. She's a celebrity, and you still aren't being heard. And those are based on people. You know, they people feel that Black women have a tolerance to pain that's different from other people. It it never ends. It's like you constantly have to prove who you are, prove what you're saying is actually happening. And you're talking to someone who just doesn't believe that that's the case for you. And a white woman can come in and say the same thing, and you're going to run diagnostic tests for them. So why is that? I think care providers really need to examine their biases. And a lot of people don't really feel like they have biases, which is the problem.
Well, I that's an interesting thing that you bring up, because first of all, I think when you say the word racist, right, or racism, it's a heavy word. It's a sharp, heavy word. I think we all like to think that we are not biased. And, well, biased is a lighter word. I think we all like to think we're not racist. Like, we don't judge people just based on race and treat people differently just because of race. And it's possible that somebody is. It's possible that I have racism built into me that I don't even know about, that I don't realize is happening. But the word is so strong that it's like, whoa, I'm not a racist.
Right.
I'm not a racist. So it's hard to address it.
It's not hard for us to address it. It's probably hard for people who don't feel like they have any biases against other people to hear it.
I'm saying I'm going to take myself as an example. It's hard for me to think of me as a racist.
Right.
Or that I have, racial judgments and treat different people differently based on race. And lately, since I've been prepping for this podcast, I do stop and think all the time. Every time I get into a different situation now, am I treating this person exactly the same way? Am I judging this person based on how they look? And I don't always know the answer. But like I said, I think that people make an impression. When you meet somebody new for the first time, you have an impression of that person within 10 seconds, and you have really very little to go by other than the cover.
Right.
You know nothing about this book.
But if your references to Black people are, you have no references. You have no personal interactions. Like, you don't have friends. If that's not the world you live in, even though you interact, like, we live in Los Angeles, it's multicultural here. But so you're not going to drive through your neighborhood and not see other people, right?
Right.
But if you don't have any personal interactions with people, what are you basing your sum up, when you sum someone up in, 10 seconds? What is that based on?
I agree with you. 100%.
Like, we have to examine what that is based on. Is that based on what media has portrayed a certain group of people as? Is that based on who they are? Is that based on what you know? Is that based on history? Like, what is that based on? I think that's the question we have to ask ourselves all the time. And it's particularly important if people's lives are on the line. So if you're a care provider, you have to address that.
To me, that's like the scariest part of all of this, is that as healthcare providers, you're taught to, in school, right, how to diagnose that you're not supposed to put any of your personal preference or your personal ideas into how you treat someone. So anyone coming off of the street, whether they are, rich, don't have any money, are somebody who's poor and have nothing, you're supposed to treat them. But regardless of anything else, you're supposed to take them as what they are bringing in front of you and listen to them as part of a history to diagnose, because 80% of the history leads you to a diagnosis. So if you're not listening to somebody, regardless, how are they making choices for people? And a lot of people come in with not knowing much about their body's anatomy. The general public, I think there's a statistic that they have, like, anyone in general, it has like a sixth grade idea of anatomy if that's not what they study. So if you don't know that and you're trusting these people who are supposed to take care of you, especially in a time where it's so, like, when you're very vulnerable as a pregnant woman, that is what I think was the scariest thing for me reading all of this, was that those are the people you're supposed to trust. So if you go there, like, as a woman in the story that you just told, I mean, all I thought about was that poor couple.
Right.
I mean, that is such a tale to lose a
and
child.
I'm not even telling you the details of everything
right.
that happened. I'm giving you
a summary.
Which is even, because I'm sure it was much worse.
It was the most intense thing I've ever seen in my life. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, the synopsis is intense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for that couple, it's just, I don't even know where you begin to, what levels you start to heal first, on that.
I think I'll speak for myself as a Black woman, because you've dealt with this all of your life,
right?
You spot it immediately. You know where it's coming from. You can The body language is different. You can see it. You can see it when people walk in the room. We are very aware that that's the space it's coming from. Mm. And we're very aware when it's not coming from that space. Because this is something this is how you maneuver through the world. But if you're not looking at a woman who's pregnant, and if you're not, when that woman is coming and she's talking to you, if you're not taking into consideration the stressors that come with being a Black body in this world, you're missing half of who they are. If what I hear all the time, which is really annoying, that I don't see color, then you are eliminating a huge part of who that human being is. Because to move in the world as in a Black body is a very, very different experience than moving in through the world in a white body. So if you're going to negate all that, you're already missing a huge piece of who that person is. And how can you treat a person if you don't know who they are? Like, how do you, if all the aspects of who they are that contributes to their health, if you don't take those into consideration, how can you care for them? Hmm. It's impossible, because you're eliminating a huge piece of what's happening to them and what's happening to their bodies when they're, not only when they're growing humans, just in general.
Right.
I feel like a lot of the racism in healthcare may be unconscious. Do you agree with that?
No.
You think it's deliberate?
I mean, do I think what is consciousness? Is consciousness that you choose to not examine why you think the way you are? You think? Because that, to me, that's a cop out.
I'll go even more basic than that. Someone that doesn't realize that they're treating two different groups of people two different ways.
I don't know how that would be unconscious. For me, I can't imagine that that's an unconscious act. It's something that you don't want to pay attention to. But, you know, that's why racism exists in everywhere, because people don't want to pay attention to they don't want to be responsible for their actions.
I think that what I was getting at earlier is when you start to point it out, people get defensive.
Exactly.
And we have to get past those defenses to have a solution. And hopefully in the second part of our podcast, we'll talk about solutions. But I do believe a lot of it is unconscious. I think that sometimes they don't even realize they're doing it. Look, I think that in obstetrics in general, a lot of the terms that we use are very derogatory towards women. If the cervix starts to dilate early, we call it an incompetent cervix. That's a horrible term. What does that mean, incompetent? If the cervix is dilating slowly when she's in labor, it's failure to progress. It's a terrible term again, failure. The mucus plug, I think, could have been called the pregnancy cap or something nicer than mucus plug. And I think that at the end of pregnancy, when you're ready to give birth, what happens to the mucus plug is you lose it because you're an incompetent failure. Like all the terms, I lost my plug. You have to actually call somebody and say, I lost my plug. Why not say, I released my plug, my cap, because I'm ready to have my baby now. I don't think those terms were set up to be demeaning, but they're terrible terms. Men don't get that. We get things like erectile dysfunction. It's like, you know, you poor baby, what happened to you? I feel so bad for you. And even then, it's not like most of it's working good. That one function is not, you know, imagine they called it incompetent penis. It would be a whole different situation. So this is what a male versus female medical system looks like, right? But young doctors who are being trained now, whether they're men or women in obstetrics, use those terms. And I don't think that they even give any thought to the terms.
So, but the obstetrical terminology for things that you are being taught is mm-hmm. one thing. To walk in and give care to someone based on what are you basing that care on? Like I think saying that someone that you know, racism is people aren't conscious of it.
Not all racism.
But what we're talking about here.
I think that
here.
There's an element of really good-natured doctors who come into work every day wanting to help.
Then why would you be defensive if someone brought it to your attention? Because if you are truly a good-natured doctor coming into a room wanting to help, then if I say to you what you said is incredibly offensive and it's actually racist, then the first thing I would do would want to understand why. Tell me more about that. Because I don't want that ever to happen again. I don't want anyone to ever feel that way when I say something to them again. So to say that it's just because it's not like we're just letting things go. We say things all the time.
Well, look, there's a spectrum. I think that there are people that when you point it out to them, they do. That would be their response. What do you mean? What happened? Tell me more about that. I didn't mean to offend you. I'm so sorry. Then I think there's another group of people that would get defensive. And I think you get defensive because racism is such a strong thing. You don't like to think of yourself as being racist or biased.
But I guess my biggest issue with that is that, of course, you don't want to think of yourself as racist. But if the person that you're dealing with is telling you that this is incredibly offensive and you don't want to be viewed as a person who's racist, why aren't you open to hear and listen to what they have to say? Like, why are you defensive about that? Because you're someone's care provider, right?
Yeah.
So the only way you're going to provide competent care is to be able to see this person. So in doing that, if they are saying something to you that is clearly offensive to them, why would that make you defensive?
So I think, because you keep saying you.
No, not you.
I know.
Elliot, definitely not you.
I think I am that person that a few points, and things not about race, but in general, sometimes a patient will point out, hey, I didn't like this experience. And it is devastating to me. Like, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. I would never want anybody to feel something negative in my office or under my care. So I think I am that person. But I also think that there's people who detest racism so much that to be called on racism would shock their system.
They need to be shocked.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I think they need to be shocked.
Because the bigger picture is that they're not the victim. The person who has that the racism is directed to is the victim.
Absolutely.
So if you're incredibly shocked and offended, like, so what? You should be, because the behavior needs to change. So I think, I mean,
but
I understand
if
what you're
saying.
But if
they don't even realize they're doing it.
You know what? Because and the reason why they don't realize they're doing it, Elliot, is because white people can walk through this world without having to address any of those things because
yes.
they don't affect them personally.
Yes.
So that's not my problem. What I'm saying is that it's offensive, and I don't care that you are just so offended that, oh my God, I love everybody. I don't, because you don't understand how many times I hear when, because this this topic comes up all the time for me, right?
Sure.
And you don't understand how many times when I bring it up like that, I'll give you an example. I took my son to buy a car, right? We go to test drive the car. The guy comes out and he goes, you don't have any warrants or anything. You're not like, you know, are you?
What?
That was the first thing he said to my son. And we're like, what? Like, what the heck? Like, what? Who? How? We're here to buy a car. Like, why would you say that? You don't. I mean, I'm gonna check your license. So he goes to check the license, and me and my son are standing there. And we're like, dude, he's so racist. Like, that's ridiculous. So he comes back, and I say, you know, would you, if he was blonde hair, blue eyed, would you? The first thing that comes out of your mouth when we're coming to purchase a car at this facility, would it be, I hope you don't have any warrants? Like, why would you assume that? He's like, oh, it was just a joke. It was just a joke. Like, dude, that's not funny.
No.
That's like, so what I'm saying is that being unconscious is because white people have the privilege to walk through the world and not be affected by anything. So that's great for them. But other people are suffering because of that privilege that they have. So I don't ever want. It's really important for me to state that I don't believe in unconscious racism. I believe that you have white privilege and you don't have to deal with that. But there's a difference. You don't have to. So unconscious is like you don't have any realm around anything. You have the privilege of those things never ever happening to you, and so you don't have to deal with it. And it doesn't affect you. So that's that. So I think to say that, you know, some people are really great people, but they're just not, you know, this is a completely unconscious thing is a cop out. And it gives an excuse for people to say like, well, you know, I'm really a nice person. I just like, I don't know. Like, I'm just, no, you get to have that mentality because you walk through a world with privilege that many people don't have.
Sure. Well, I'm looking to see how we can improve healthcare for all. And decrease these disparities by improving the statistics and the care, because the care is improved for black women and babies and equal to the care that's received by white women and babies. But my sense is that some racism is overt. Some racism is overt and some racism is not overt.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that some people the numbers are so staggering that I feel like there are people who are treating black patients and white patients differently and don't consciously realize that they're doing that.
It's that. And it's also the statistics are so overt because the effect of racism on black bodies is huge. And so that plays into that. So not only do you have to be a conscientious care provider and realize that, you have to do things to make that different.
All right. I want to I'm learning a lot.
I'm glad.
I don't know what it's like to walk through the world as someone who's judged and treated differently because of my skin color. I've been in situations where anti-Semitism plays a role.
Absolutely.
And it does not feel good.
Right.
I want to learn more, and I want to be part of the solution. When we are going to come back, we're going to talk more about potential things we can do to change the situation. We're going to take a quick commercial break and be right back with midwife Debbie Allen. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, and your co-host, Kristen Palacy. We are continuing our discussion with Debbie Allen about racial disparity in American childbirth. All right, so there's a clear problem. There's an obvious problem. I printed out all this research about from California, how 1 in 7 African-American babies are born too early or too small. African-American babies are more than twice as likely as white babies to die before their first birthday. And different states publish data. New York has some very similar data. And like we said, even the New York data very clearly shows it transcends socioeconomic class. And really, it's hard to explain these outcomes without pointing the finger to systematic racism, that people are treated differently. White and black patients are treated differently in childbirth, but also in general. I would like to look at solutions.
Yeah, and, me too.
Okay, good. So I would open it to you first and kind of see what kind of ideas you have solutions. I mean, if everybody could just, well, I don't know. Let's start with you.
Please.
Oh, well, I was just saying if everybody can have their baby with Debbie Allen at home, it would be wonderful.
That would be great. I think one, the piece of this that we can't negate is the effects of systematic racism on people's bodies and their health in general, independent of pregnancy, just in general. That is issue number one. In healthcare, so you're dealing with someone who's already at a disadvantage because, you know, for us, even on a subconscious level, we deal with this all the time. So then you get them in. So then you have a woman who's pregnant, and you have to have a care provider who hears her, who listens, and who can come from a perspective of understanding that they walked into the office with the effects of systematic racism on their bodies and how that's going to affect their pregnancy. So I think care providers have to examine their biases. They have to examine who they see when that person walks in the room. Do they not see color? which means you don't see that person? Do they have a preconceived idea of who this person is based on stereotypes? Like, you have to examine really what you're looking at. For me, when I'm dealing with women, with people when they're pregnant, it's I know that they know that I see them and they know that I hear them. And it's easier to be open about what's going on with you when people see you and hear you. And you don't and you're not being judged for that.
I mean, I think that's something that's special about you in general.
Aw.
That you have a really good, I mean, you're one of those people, I've said this before about one other person on the podcast, when I picture you, especially because I'm face blind, I just picture it like a big heart.
Thank you.
We had you also as a guest on The Real Midwives of Los Angeles, and we were working with a woman who gave birth very prematurely, and it was right after the premature birth, and she already had a toddler, and she's really struggling hard and had a lot of guilt and was blaming herself. And I sort of felt like, once you started talking, I just felt like I need to shut up and listen. I just saw a big heart, and she related to you really well, and you could tell that you almost felt what she was going through. And were able to comfort her in a really magical way. You mentioned during the break we took, you mentioned an interesting thing. Because I said, since I've been doing this research, I sort of, when I meet somebody new, I instead of giving myself the 10 seconds sum up, I am trying to start to think more about what am I judging this person based on if all I see is the cover? And you said it's probably a good example to a good exercise to sort of look at people and write down what you think initially of them. And then you can kind of see your own way of how you judge people. And then I went on a bigger scale and I thought it would be really cool to do medical school experiments of presenting clinical findings and a patient and the students would be able to ask the patients questions and come to clinical conclusions, and to have different patients of different ethnicities come through with the same exact presentations and see how medical school students, what their findings, how they might differ or be the same from patient to patient from different classes and races. You and I butt heads a little bit. And
respectfully.
Respectfully, but I think – you know, I don't have the world experience that you do of living in the United States with the biases that you're subject to. So I definitely defer to you. And the only reason I continue to butt heads with you is because I'm trying to find solutions. And I'm trying to understand how in a large healthcare system where there is systematic racism going on, I think there are some people who are more overtly racist and some people who are more less consciously racist and don't necessarily realize that they're doing it.
You're so funny.
Why is that?
Because you've very strategically said the exact same thing without using...
Unconscious.
Unconscious.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm agreeing with you. You're having an effect on me. But I think, would you not agree that there are greater and lesser degrees of consciousness?
Yeah, there's greater and lesser degrees of consciousness. But, you know, when like I we're going to disagree on saying that people are unconsciously racist because
I'm not going to disagree too much on that because I think the term means different things to me than it means to you.
But why is that? Is that because I'm a black woman and you probably people don't they don't assume have assumptions about you.
Yeah, sure. I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, I said that from the beginning. I defer to you because I don't walk through this world with that type of bias at me. You know, people first get to know me before they dislike me. It's different. But I do feel in my heart that there are a large number of providers who are not so conscious of the way they judge people differently, and that if it was pointed out to them, that they would take a serious look at themselves and try to figure out how to change that.
There are some, I agree.
And so I think that might be the low-hanging fruit on a good place to get started.
And another good place to get started is for white people to check white people. So when they hear those comments, when they hear, you know, when they see those things going on, they be the ones to say that's not appropriate. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be the responsibility of us to always correct bad behavior. Like, this shift is not going to happen unless people who don't look like me check other people when they hear bias and racist statements or just comments or just assumptions. So, you know, it's not just, I don't think it shouldn't be the person who's being victimized. They shouldn't have to be responsible.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah. This is why I'm here tonight.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that in all forms of healthcare training, that there needs to be. I mean, when I went to chiropractic school, we didn't have any courses or presentations on this topic. Mm-hmm. And in retrospect, there needed to be.
Like, absolutely.
Somebody needed to come in and say, hey, you're going to be the new crop of healthcare providers. You need to know that there's bias in healthcare.
And it can't be something that the best training are trainings that make you feel mm-hmm. for this type of thing. So it can't be something that, you know, like you just have to go through and check the boxes and you're like, okay, I finished my, you know, the racist, don't be a racist section of my training. It has to be something that's really comprehensive that makes you feel
yeah.
what's happening. And that's not really happening.
Well, I feel like when you point out this disparity when it comes to childbirth, you have to be numb not to feel it.
I mean, I think people are like, oh, that's awful. And then they just keep moving through their lives.
Oh, for me.
Just like with everything else. Like people hear, you hear a lot of the things that are going on that systemic racism is the cause. And you're like, oh, that's awful. But then you have the option to just, you know, keep going through your life.
Yeah. What kind of things would you say would make about to graduate new doctor really feel it?
I mean, that's a big question. I don't have all the answers, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out the answers as well. I mean, I guess definitely comprehensive training from someone who specializes in this mm-hmm. and in-depth training, not just a 2-hour class you have to take.
Right. So I think it should be a required course, not just a workshop, but
right.
a required course that
right.
as you go through it.
And that course has to deal with, you know, history, like all the things that lead to how black people are treated today, where that came from. You know, it's layers to all of this. It's you know, it's very strategic layers to.
But I had nothing. Kristen, you graduated much more recently.
I mean, they talk about it a little bit, but more of like the special populations, they just kind of like generalize. It's like, you know, geriatric pregnancy and whatever. They talk about certain things, especially with like medications for us, like understanding that why we need to, like I think in pharmacology, they did a little bit of a better job because mm-hmm. they were trying to say like, hey, we need to know this for these reasons
right.
so we can catch it first. Like, hey, we're supposed to be the front line. So, but it's not anything like you're talking about. It's more like.
It sounds like it was mentioned once in a while.
Exactly.
Which is more than I had.
Right.
So progress.
But in a different sense, not really so much about like.
Race.
More about like these things happen. There are like clear problems with healthcare.
But
and
not
how
why.
Do we help them? Yeah.
And not why.
And not why.
Yeah, exactly.
No why.
And the why has to be addressed.
So I think any kind of healthcare provider who comes out, whether it's holistic or allopathic, part of your training should be required to take a full course that goes through everything that you're talking about and things that we probably can't think about right now. But it would have to be developed to show the full picture and to give providers who are graduating a sensitivity, an awareness, a knowledge, a passion for making sure that it doesn't happen in their practice.
And it should probably be something that's ongoing, not something that you take to graduate, but something that you have to take every year.
Part of continuing education.
Yeah, like the law portion or
absolutely.
Ethics.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's always
or
broken down
ethics.
Like that.
Yeah.
Technique, law, ethics, and mm-hmm. and this should also be included in there. I agree. But you also mentioned something interesting, which is that a lot of that judgment comes from things that we see in the media. So I always use also an example for childbirth. People who have no idea what childbirth is like haven't really been exposed to it. And then are pregnant and everything that they know about childbirth comes from TV, movies, and newspaper headlines are terrified of childbirth because
Absolutely.
The assumption is that really every plane is either going to have engine trouble and fall out of the sky or be hijacked by terrorists or have snakes on it. Like
right.
that's all you're exposed to. You never really consider the possibility that you could just take off, have a smooth flight with a nice snack and land safely. So if the media portrayal of Black Americans is negative.
Would you say that it is?
Would you say that it is?
I mean,
I don't. I'm not in the media that much, but certainly in news, right?
So just news. That's just use
from news. Absolutely.
Okay.
From news, absolutely. From television and movies, I'm not sure. I don't because I'm face blind. I don't really watch a lot of TV.
News is important. That's where people get what they consider real information.
Right. And a lot of it's fake news.
And a lot of it is fake news.
So, yes, absolutely in newspapers and news media, 100%, I think that the portrayal, if you are a non-Black person who never has interaction with Black people and all you know is what you see in the news, I think that you would judge them very negatively.
And a lot of people, even though, like, we live in a place, you know, there's some states that are there, you don't see a lot of diversity at all. We live in Los Angeles. There's a lot of different people here. So it's different to move, you know, in a world where you see others, but do you interact with them? Do you know them? Do you have personal relationships with them? Do you have any other opinion of who they are other than what's been given to you? That's completely different.
But then the question is, how do you change the media?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, that's a whole nother beast, I feel like. Because the media, I think, just doesn't do a service. If you want to find information, you have to go look for it.
Yeah.
You can't. And I think that's also like a responsibility for everybody. Because if you just believe what you see on news, then you're not getting
information. You're getting what they want you to know.
Exactly. And there's so much. I mean, personally, I like to watch the news from different countries because at least they'll tell you what's going on, you know. But I think that's also, like you said, a choice. And if people aren't aware or take responsibility that you you're part of all of that, however way that is, I don't think there will be much change.
Yeah. And you're part of it even if you – like if you can – you can still be really nice to everybody and still be part of it. Because if you're not part of what changes, what shifts it, then you're part of the problem. If you're not conscientiously part of the – of creating something or participating in something that shifts this dynamic – then you're complacent and you're part of the problem.
I have a question for you, which is if you're pregnant and Black, do you have recommendations?
And I've been both of those things, pregnant
That's right.
and Black.
I've been neither of those things. But there's hope. Maybe one day.
For which? do I have recommendations as far as what? A Black pregnant person should do?
I think everybody today, no matter what's going on with you healthcare-wise, you sort of have to take the bull by the horns
right.
and be an active part of your own
Absolutely.
Healthcare team. But since there is this huge disparity and since there is racism in the system, what can a pregnant Black person do to look out for themselves, to help themselves have a better, safer, healthier experience during pregnancy, postpartum, and the first year after?
I'd really research who you choose as your provider. Interview, I think people don't realize that you don't have to just go to, I mean, the other issue is economics. Like if you're on Medi-Cal and this is the provider they've assigned to you, it's much harder to switch. And sometimes you could go through almost your whole pregnancy before you were able to switch to a new provider. So that's a whole nother issue.
And they change that a lot too.
And they change that a lot. And that's a whole nother problem. But I'd say really research who you're dealing with if you have that option. And if you don't, really ask questions, really speak up for yourself. If you're pregnant, definitely get someone to advocate for you, a doula, someone where you have someone to bounce this information that you're given to make sure that it really is what should be working for you in your pregnancy. And just really remember that you have a voice and that you can say no and you can You can request someone different in the room, and you have options to speak up. Mm-hmm. I think we just think we get, you know, a lot of people in healthcare, not just Black folks, a lot of people, you get the doctor you get in, those are your options. Know that you definitely have other options and you have a voice.
Yeah, I feel that a lot when I support people in labor is that, you know, they work for us.
Right.
But they make it feel like sometimes.
Like they're doing us a favor.
Like we work for them.
Absolutely.
And these are your choices and you're done. But that's not the way it works in our country. It's not the way it's supposed to work.
It isn't. I mean, and that changes depending on your economics. And that's a whole different conversation. But you're still able to say something. You should never feel that just because. I think people are a little bit intimidated by doctors and that feel like they, because they don't know what they know, they don't know what to say.
Well, also you're kind of sometimes naked and sitting on deli paper, and it just doesn't feel that
empowering. Very vulnerable.
Yeah.
You are vulnerable. And
for me,
you're vulnerable.
Too.
Yes.
Yeah,
and you're vulnerable.
Right.
But it's just really important that we do that. Like, it was important for Serena to keep saying, like, no, this, I'm telling you something's wrong. Like, you just have to keep at it until someone listens to you.
As a provider, what are some suggestions you have for healthcare providers who aren't Black and don't have that perspective? How do you have, like, good, I guess, tips on how to make someone, if you don't understand that perspective, to feel listened to? Or, like, how can they change that? Like, how do they change the conversation, I guess? Or do you know what I'm trying to ask? Like, so what are your, for the other side, the healthcare provider, if that's not where you come from, how do you, you say a lot of people don't feel listened to. So what is the, like, what are some things that you would like to see change on their end? Like, so that you could hear, like, maybe we don't hear all the time. Like,
so that they would be able to hear that person?
Yes.
Like, understand who that person is. Examine your biases and why you have them so that you are able to ask the right questions. Understand the dynamic of someone coming into your office with the stressors of systematic racism, like how that affects their bodies. Like, understand, like, read and understand that perspective.
So where should they go find that information, like, about stressors? Or if they don't, I mean, just saying, like, they might not know where to do that.
It's, I mean, Google it. I mean, I don't mean, I'm not trying
no, to. I'm not saying it for me.
But I mean,
I'm
really,
just, but
it's
I'm just
out,
saying,
it's,
like,
it really
it
is out there.
It's easy to access.
Yeah, it's easy.
Right.
It's very easy to access.
Because not everyone has that ability to address, like, to, if you never started that conversation with yourself, to address your biases.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that if that's something you want,
yeah,
research it like you would anything else, because there's so much information out there to help with that.
Right.
There's programs, there's classes, there's so much information out there to help with that.
Are there good classes? I mean, where would you start?
I mean, I wouldn't recommend, I mean, I'm not going to recommend one in particular.
Okay. Yeah. I just didn't know if you
podcast.
Like, if there's like, right,
but yeah,
if there were
but
better there, ones there, than others, there must be. Right?
Yeah, there are lots.
Right.
And
so just keep looking for them, basically.
Yeah. I mean, because it has to be something you want to know. You know what I mean? Just like anything else that would be important to you. Even if you knew nothing about it, you'd find that information because that information is important to you. So as a care provider, treat it the same way.
So make it an important thing you research.
Yeah. Make it something that is important enough for you to find out.
You know what? Just recently here, I think it was on Saturday is why I didn't go. But there was a gathering and presentation on racial disparity in pregnancy and childbirth. It was a workshop. And all of the follow-up information that came out of it was very positive, how helpful and impactful it will hopefully be. So, I mean, that's an area, too. If you don't have them going on in your community, then create them.
Yeah.
Yeah, find ways to bring them there. That's good.
Be a part of the solution. Well,
for not only for yourself, but for your colleagues.
Community.
100%.
For your colleagues, yeah.
I hope I didn't offend you today, and
not at all.
I hope I didn't offend any of our listeners. I'm genuinely curious. I'm genuinely introspective. I grew up in a very sheltered community of not just white folks, but Orthodox Jewish white folks. I was very surprised when I got outside the bubble that not everybody's Jewish, and other shocking things. So I'm still learning. I'm a provider. I'm a healthcare provider. I like to think that I learn something from everyone, every person I meet. I don't always immediately know what I learned from them, but I know there is something to learn from everyone, regardless of who they are and what they look like and where they came from. And that's what I try to focus on is what can I learn from you? But I am going to do exactly what you said and examine my biases and where they came from. I'm going to work hard to learn more.
And just continue to have conversation, continue to create spaces for conversation like this. I mean, that, you know, just like you said, you didn't know. A lot of people, I guess, don't know. So, like, to continue to create spaces for people to learn and for people to examine, you know, why they think the way they think.
Are you, where can we find you online?
You can find me. I'm Tribe Midwifery. That's my business. You can find me at www.tribemidwifery.com. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, all those things, Tribe Midwifery.
And zipping all over the Los Angeles area.
And zipping all
catching
over.
Catching babies.
Absolutely.
This is the second time we've sat down to have this podcast. The first time, I think we got 4.5 minutes into
I'm
it.
Sorry.
And you got called out to what seemed like two births.
I did.
At the same time. So. I'm glad we made it through.
Superpowers.
Kristen, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Debbie, like I said at the beginning, I always learn a lot when
Thank
I'm around you.
Thank
and
you.
I hope to spend a lot more time around you.
Thank you.
At home, thanks for listening to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting podcast. If you have a topic you'd like to hear about, just send us an email, info@informedpregnancy.com. And then visit us online for lots more information about pregnancy and parenting at informedpregnancy.com.
I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn and my baby's due.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.